You are listening to Classical Mornings with Mike and Gene here at the new Classical FM. Now, if you follow sports at all, you know that inherently most sports leagues are ridiculous. And not only from contracts, but usually from the people who run the league. They come up with the most ridiculous things of all time. And particularly, I don't know whether it's just me because I follow, although I think the NFL would give the NHL a good run for its money, but the NHL is the most ridiculous. And this is shown quite well in a brand new book from Sean McIndoe, the man behind the Down Goes Brown blog, featured on The Athletic, Sportsnet, ESPN, etc. The new book published by Random House Canada is The Down Goes Brown History of the NHL, the world's most beautiful sport, the world's most ridiculous league. And Sean McIndoe joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, do you want to do a quick hi to your dad?
Yeah, I got to say hi to my dad. He's a big fan. He's more excited about this than pretty much anything else I've done. So hi, Dad.
There we go. So is it just me or is the NHL potentially the most ridiculous league through its history?
I think it is for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's got more history than just about any league other than Major League Baseball. You're talking 100 years. You go back to the 1920s, it's a totally different world. There are stories from then that you just can't even get your head around in the modern sense. And also, the NHL has been a small league for so much of its
existence. That's it. It's six, out of the big four. It's
exactly
the tiniest.
I mean, you had the original six, 25 years of six teams. I mean, six owners, six GMs. That's a very small group that's mm-hmm. putting it together. And even today, now that the league is much larger, audience-wise, it's still very much kind of a niche league, especially down in the States. So there's not as many eyes on it. Maybe there's people who feel like they can get away with things that are a little, maybe they wouldn't try in some other leagues.
Well, a lot of people have gotten away with a lot of things in the NHL. I want to go back to some, I mean, there's so much great fun information in this book. For example, one thing I did not know, and I was actually kind of stunned by this, the original six. We're not the original six.
This is something that
it's a myth.
If you listen to the NHL's version of its history, and they just had their centennial, and they did a lot of this stuff where they're putting the history out there, but you would be under the impression that the league begins with the original six. I mean, it's right there in the name, the original six. These must be the six teams that started the league. The original six era started in 1942. The NHL began in 1917. So that's 25 years before we get to the original six of history. The league does not start with six teams. It starts with four teams, drops down to three almost immediately because one of the arenas burns down after a few weeks and the league almost folds. There's all sorts of teams coming and going. At one point, there's as many as 10 teams. The number is dropping, going up and down. Teams are moving around. The teams that we consider the original six, the only ones that existed when the league started were the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs, who weren't even the Maple Leafs at the time. They didn't get that name for another 10 years. So, it takes a while before the Blackhawks and Bruins and Rangers and Red Wings show up. So really what we consider that original six era, and we think back, Maurice Richard and Gordie Howe and all these legends, that was the golden era of the league. Mm-hmm. But there had already been a whole quarter century of history before that part of the league.
Exactly. Yeah, the Senators still have a Stanley Cup banner up.
They've got them hanging there, yeah.
The fun thing I found about this was the owners. I mean, and they are a special brand of criminal in a lot of ways. No, because you look at people like even in the modern era, Harold Ballard or the guy, what's his name? It just escaped me, who owned the Kings. The guy who went to jail.
That doesn't narrow it down that much when you're talking NHL owners, right? I mean, that's
Bruce McNall. That's who I'm thinking of, Bruce McNall. But even, these guys were cantankerous.
They were
horrible people.
They were, and a lot of them were. These days, I'm up in Ottawa, so there's a lot of fans. Or Eugene Melnick's not a popular guy.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
And I mean, I had somebody ask me, and I could tell it was a younger fan. They said, "Where does Eugene Melnick rank on the list of terrible owners in the history of the league?"
Are you kidding?
I said, "You know what? I mean, I've got with all due respect to Senators fans, and I understand a lot of the complaints they have. I mean, he doesn't get into the top 10 or the top 50 because you look at some of the stuff. I mean, Harold Ballard." It won't be a shock, shows up kind of again and again in the book. And I mean, back in those days, you could have a situation where a guy like Harold Ballard could sit down with the owner of the Chicago Blackhawks and they break out the booze and get a few drinks deep, and suddenly they've decided they're going to sell Frank Mihaljevic to the Chicago Blackhawks for $1 million, which is an unheard of sum. That was more than teams were worth back then.
No kidding.
And you know, they kind of wake up the next day and sober up a little bit and think, oh, geez, what have we done? But it's already on the front page of the newspaper, and they've got to figure out how to get their way out of this.
The most remarkable Harold Ballard story came from Peter Pocklington, in which the suggestion that they just switch teams in the cities.
You talk about the biggest trade in NHL history, I think, in Wayne Gretzky and going from Edmonton to the LA. But we almost had, according to Peter Pocklington, a deal where the Oilers and Leafs would trade the Oilers for the Leafs. And it was literally the Edmonton Oilers would pick up and come to Toronto and become the Toronto Oilers, and the Maple Leafs would become the Edmonton Maple Leafs. This was in the early 80s. And according to Peter Pocklington, he says it was a done deal. They'd agreed to it. He was going to Toronto. Ballard was getting a whole lot of money in exchange for giving up the better market, and that it was Harold Ballard who eventually backed out of it. And as I say in the book, when Harold Ballard is the voice of reason,
exactly,
you know things have gone completely off the track.
Well, why are all these guys crooks?
Because they could be back then. I mean, you go back to the beginning history of the league.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these guys were literally crooks. I mean, there's characters like Big Bill Dwyer, who was a what would have been called back then an entrepreneur, but he was a gangster. He was a bootlegger. And, you know, back then, the qualification for owning an NHL team was you had to have enough money to own an NHL team. Huh. And that was pretty much it. You needed, if you had access to a rink, that was good too. And so, you know, that's what it took. And even, you know, in the modern era, you know, the NHL has never been a league where people are necessarily beating the door down in order to get in and own a team. It hasn't always been the best business investment. So sometimes they kind of took what they could get, and sometimes what they could get were people who turned out not to quite be what they maybe thought they were.
But that's kind of turned around, and I think with this week, the installment of Gary Bettman into the Hockey Hall of Fame, I mean, he has, for better or for worse, I mean, I know a lot of people hate him, but he's really turn things around. I mean, they have Seattle banging at their door right now.
He has, certainly from a financial perspective, he's grown the league by leaps and bounds. As far as cleaning up some of the messes, he's done a good job. It is a better, more well-run league now than it was when he took over. It's not perfect. There have certainly been some situations with owners, even in his tenure, where guys have turned out not to be quite what the league was led to believe. But yes, I mean, I will give him credit, begrudgingly, for having improved the league in a lot of ways. But I will also say that, I mean, given what he inherited, the bar was pretty low for him to make it look better 25 years down the road.
What's your favorite era?
I mean, it's the sort of thing where I remember hearing once somebody said that the best era of pop music is whatever when you were 16 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of in that same, you know, I was in that age, that late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, wow.
Right before the dead puck era takes over. I'm a Leafs fan, so this is the Leafs, the resurgence of the Leafs, mm-hmm. Doug Gilmore and Wendell Clark and all of that. And, you know, the game was, it was fun and fast and high scoring. And you had Wayne Gretzky just at the tail end of his prime, Mario Lemieux taking over,
right.
Jaromir Jagr coming in, like all these stars. And they had room to do their thing. They had room to shine, and lots of 50 goal seasons and lots of 100-plus point seasons.
I try and tell that to my son. And like even lesser tier, like Denny Savard or Dale Hawerchuk.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, what are you talking about?
Exactly. I mean, just it felt like, and you know, Gary Bettman always says that there's more talent in the league now than there ever has been. And you know what? I agree with him on that, because I think you look right now, every team's third and fourth line has still got talent on it.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is they don't have enough room, and they're not allowed to show that talent the way that they were back in the 80s and 90s, before defense took over, before goalies were gigantic, before the butterfly and everything like that, that kind of changed the game. I don't know the answer on how you get it back, or even if
bigger rinks, Olympic
rinks.
Size.
You know, that can help, but a lot of international hockey is just as much clutching and grabbing to take the room. I'd like to see the nets maybe a little bit bigger. You know, when you see Wayne Gretzky come in and, you know, watch those old clips of him, and he winds up to take a slap shot.
Yeah.
And there's so much net, but, you know, because he's facing some 5'6" goalie. You know, he's facing little Alan Bester there. He's got the whole net to shoot at. You know, and versus Connor McDavid, who comes in with all the skill in the world.
Yeah.
This is a guy who's won 2 scoring titles. He's never had more than 110 points. Because that's what the limit is for a star in today's league. I know the scoring's bumped up a little bit this year and last year. I'd love to see it go up a lot more because I'm old enough to remember when you saw more and more of those goals and those high scores and those accomplishments. And it was fun.
It was.
It was so much fun back then.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike? When's your favorite?
Well, because when I grew up, I'm a 70s guy.
70s guy, yeah.
You know, I mean, I can remember watching back when NBC had games on the weekends. And you'd see the Boston Bruins against the Philadelphia Flyers, and you're like, oh, jeez.
Yeah.
this is going to be a bloodbath.
Uh-huh.
But that would be my favorite. But you know what? I want to thank you so much, Sean, for coming in today, because I can't believe you've crammed so much into a book like this. It is a lot of fun. There are a lot of laugh-out-loud moments, a lot of gasps, and you're going to learn a great deal. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Been speaking to Sean McIndoe, author of The Down Goes Brown, History of the NHL. If you have anyone who loves hockey on your Christmas list, this is the book to get. It's published by Random House Canada. Run out and get your copy today.